As long as I thought that wasn't available, I couldn't do it. And if I really thought that my presenting, talking to you on another reality that is not the familiar one you live in, was a cruel act, was just taunting you, which is what I, you know, we both can feel what that's about, I think that I don't think I could do that. I don't think it would come out of me. So it has to have in it, and that's why they say, speak to those that can hear. Says those that don't, don't. I mean, you came here. See, the fact that you came into this room is your, that's the witness. That's the part of you that is doing it. But it can be interpreted from within the thing, but it also can be seen from without. Boy, that's interesting. Well, I listen too, you know. I mean, just because I say it doesn't mean I understand it.
This may not be too coherent, but I'll try anyway. Hate is just me created by I, just an artificial thing of my persona, not me. Why is love different?
And why is what?
Love different.
The kind of love that is the polar opposite of hate isn't different. That's why the third Chinese patriarch says, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences when love and hate are both absent, because as long as it's a polar opposite. This is a semantic problem, actually. Because when we're talking about this other quality of love, it's the difference between what is called romantic love and conscious love. Conscious love is a way in which there are no longer boundaries between anything. It's everything keeps merging into itself. It loves in the sense of emerging love. It's a love of the one, not of the many. It's not relational between two things. It's something, when you say, I am in love, or we are in love, you could, most people interpret it as, I am in love with you. But really, what you, the other way of saying it is, you are a, this is a technical way, you are a key stimulus that releases me into the place where I am in love. And then I say, I'm in love. See? And you say, I'm in love, and then we conclude we are in love with each other. All we are the connections to that place of love in each other. That quality of love is the same word as presence. It's the same word as awareness. Same word as isness. You know, it's like the point where the thing all comes together, where beauty, truth, all those things come together. It's the perfect, it's the golden mean, it's all that stuff. And that's the quality. So the word is just a sloppy linguistics, you know, to use the word love for both of those things. Because love includes hate. Just as we're going to see as we go on, that joy includes suffering.
Nothing matters, and yet we do things, and hopefully we do them with vigor and high activity, and then we're good at them, and we become attached to them.
Yeah.
You advocate periodically just changing one's life circumstances to...
No, change your mind.
You don't have to change the form, change the mind. It's like I go out and lecture. And everybody says, oh, Ram Dass, thank you so much. Oh, Ram Dass, that was wonderful. Oh, Ram Dass, you know. Well, there's a toxicity in all that. You know, toxins build up. And every now and then I can feel overload of that stuff. And I got to clean it out. I don't have to change the game. I just have to change my head. Now, it may mean that for a little while I have to pull back from that to go and sit. Like next week I leave for Hawaii for a month. To surf. You know, that's all I'm going to do, is just surf and eat and walk and read and just, you know. And that's the way I'm going to detoxify, if you will, from being somebody, doing something. And then after you sit with the ocean for a while and sit with the wind and sit with all the forces, pretty soon that whole, the immensity of the whole game, and you start to come back into perspective a little bit. And then you go out and play some more. Until you get so that the corrective mechanism is in the process itself. So you don't build the toxicity. That's what we're going to be talking about more later on. Am I dealing with the question?
Yeah.
Any more questions? Yes.
A couple questions. A couple thousand.
Are you wearing your glasses right now so you can see the faces of people
yes.
asking questions?
Yes.
So usually there's more, what you see is
yes.
more of a blur.
Yeah.
Blissful blur. What were some of the things your guru told you to do that you haven't done?
He said, give up sex and money and you will know God. He said, give up sex and money and you will know God. And I'm learning what that means. I'm learning how to... It was like, he said at me at one point, your father has money? I said, yeah. He said, he's going to leave it to you? I said, well, he's going to leave me a part of it. He says, you're not to accept your inheritance. Now, to tell a Jewish boy from Boston that is absolutely, I mean, that is just out of the question, you know. What does this Hindu nut know, you know? He's telling me not to accept my inheritance, you know. And so I thought, okay, I won't accept my inheritance. What the hell, you know. And I came back, and it was amazing how it changed my relation with my father. I didn't tell him I wasn't going to, because he had lived his life to make the inheritance for me. But... and my brothers, but my family. But I, in my mind, that was the truth. And he felt the vibration, because suddenly that part of me that was sort of being the kind of gentleman yogi, because I knew that someday I was going to have money. You know, I didn't have to worry about the future because it was covered. Suddenly that was irrelevant to me. And I was delighted for him to live as long as he could and spend as much as he could, because it had nothing to do with me anymore. And my whole tone towards him just shifted that much. And he felt something, and he started, as he got older and older, he turned to me to take over all his finances, and he made me the executor of his will. And it turns out I've got control of all of it, and yet none of it's mine. I'm like a bookkeeper in a system. Now, I've spent years trying to figure out how I can work it so that when he dies, my brother doesn't get the money. He gets it, see? So I think, well, if I accept it and give it to a foundation... Did I slip by? Is it still not accepting it? Or when he said, you don't see, you hear the problem? And I play with those things. So I'm still playing. I haven't just completely let go of all this stuff. You know, I'm learning. I'm like a Philadelphia lawyer trying to figure out how to get around what he said and still get what I want.
You're also saying that's the only way that you will find God? That if you do that, you'll find God, but if you don't...
No, he didn't say it's the only way. I mean, with people around him, some people he said, don't smoke dope, and other people he procured it for them. Some people he said, now don't smuggle dope, and others he instructed them to smuggle dope and give the money to a children's hospital. See, you try living with a guy like that and try to use your rational mind. It's like a continuous koan, you know, you don't know what the hell he's saying. And you say, well, he was saying it to that person. But yet, the truth is the truth, and you got to play with all of it, and you got to keep getting no preferences, no opinions, love and hate together. You got to keep going beyond all those dualities your mind keeps creating.
Is that how he was able to... It seems he's manipulating reality all the time. So is he changing things, or... You think, or are they just, is everything happening and he's just flowing?
He's part of it all. He's part of it. He's part of it. Like the god of the wind is part of it. So when the wind blows, yeah, he's making it happen, but he's also part of it. I don't think he was busy being somebody. I think he's just part of it. He was an essence of listening, and therefore he was a perfect, unique manifestation of himself in the same way a rock is. Uh-huh. The rock isn't busy saying, well, I'm really a pretty good rock, you know. I think I'll stub somebody's toe today.
Yeah, you talked about the unconditional love and that you're still working, just like we all are, towards that. I was just wondering what your practice is or what kind of thing that make you move forward.
All the stuff we're talking about. Understanding what I'm saying, living it in my relationships with people, service, which we're going to be talking about later, all the devotional practice, when we chant, when I meditate, these are all part of that process. They're all part of that process. My whole life is my yoga. I no longer go to church from 8 to 10 or something. I mean, that it's all church. It's all church. I got nothing else to do but come to God. The rest of it's all a complete hype. And I'll just fill the parts and I'll play them perfectly, but don't ask me to take it seriously. And that includes Save a Foundation and all of that and people dying and all that stuff. I'll do it all. I'll do it all. And I love everybody immensely. But I'm not attached to how it all comes out. It's like I'm protesting against nuclear proliferation, but if the world goes up, that's in the way of things. We'll wait for the next trolley to come by.
Why does it matter if your brother gets the fortune?
Ah, well, that's what my guru's telling me. It doesn't, but it does, you see. That's the beauty of it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love anything that tweaks me. It shows me my clinging. It shows me my clinging. It's exquisite. And if I become phony holy, I'm gonna trip on it. See, if I try to be done before I'm done, you trip on it.
By Emmanuel telling you to take the curriculum, is that in any way in contrast to what your guru was telling you?
No, not at all. When Emmanuel tells me to take the curriculum, is that in contrast to it? Because my guru says, he doesn't even, let's see what level to take that question at. Because the concept of curriculum, that's the same thing I was saying to him. The concept of a curriculum is already the witness. See, and when Maharaj is saying something like, feed people and serve people as my way to get to God, which I haven't discussed yet. And he's saying that. And at the same moment, he's saying, don't you see it's all perfect? He keeps giving me all these messages of all these planes of reality. He's moving in and out of planes of reality and talking to me from the different ones. And I'm going to meet him when I'm not standing in any one of them. That is the curriculum, right? He is the curriculum. He's not telling me to take the curriculum. He's giving me himself, which is the curriculum. I mean, he's the manual for getting through it. Is that dealing with the question? I think so too, but go ahead.
I'm wondering about the sex and money thing. If as you work on
exactly. He didn't say what. He said give up. He said the statement is give up attachment to sex and money. He didn't say give up sex and money. Now that could be interpreted as Philadelphia lawyer, but where he's getting it from is from the holy books. That's a straight statement. And the idea is not to give up. In fact, that's where the mistake often comes, that the renunciate renounces the behavior and not the attachment to the behavior. And then the question is, if you have given up the attachment, who would you have sex with? And then, as you are more and more quiet, you would only have sex where it was dharma, where it was in the way of things. Then you've listened for that. Hey, baby, it's dharma.
Wonder if your guru ever existed?
Well, you want that in the past tense or the present tense? Present tense. Not existed, exists. Exists. Well, see, I know that when you call, when you say, do you ever wonder whether your guru, so your guru is who I conceive of as my guru, and what, if I consider any form of that, I know it doesn't. I mean, it was just a dream, it was like mist that then churned and then it just dissolved and then it wasn't. So the forms of it aren't, but he is. So your question is, do I ever wonder whether my guru exists? No. But whether I ever wonder whether he existed in form, yes. Sure. I mean, was that a real form, or was it just a plaything that my mind created for who knows, you know? Who knows?
By the nature of who you are, you can just be yourself and do things that you're drawn to, and you make a lot of money. Like, it seems that way. And so you have a lot of freedom with that money to pursue the kind of things like a month in Hawaii or whatever. You know, where I'm stuck is I don't want to get lost in the making of the money to do and be who I want to be, and I haven't found a way of doing it where I can be me and not get lost in the identity and in the doing. It just seems like, and for that, that's one reason I tend to stay here at Esalen, and there's a part of me that's drawn to being in the world, but I haven't figured out how to do the balance.
See, see how to say this. I am at this moment earning money. Okay? You're paying me to be here. But primarily, my consciousness is not on that plane of reality. It is true. But that's not what my business is, primarily. Primarily, I'm here because I want to be here sharing Dharma with people who want to hear it. Because that feeds me. It feeds the place in me that really counts. Okay? It happens in the course of it that I do make money. And that takes care of my body, and what I don't need, I give away. Okay. Now, when you say, I haven't found a way to earn money that doesn't trap me, is what you're saying. You see the kind of work you need to do on yourself to extricate yourself from being identifying with the actor so much. It's as if the thing I used the other night, you drive a car. And if you drive a car, most of us drive cars, and yet most of the time when we are driving the car, we are not busy driving the car, and yet the car is being driven. We're thinking about where we're going, where we came from, we're tuning the radio, we're looking for the police, whatever we're doing. And we're just not, we're not busy driving the car. Well, the problem is every time you go to make money, you get busy making money. It turns real for you. Actually, if making money involves other human beings, whether you're a waitress or taking care of children or whatever, that's the existential situation that is given to you at that moment through which you share the spirit. I mean, who are you dealing with? Like when I go into a bank to deposit the money I'm going to make from here and I hand it to the teller, who do I hand it to? Do I hand it to a teller? In which case I am a check casher? Or is this another meeting? We've got to stop meeting like this. Am I just meeting my guru or God or myself or whatever you want to say in a different form? In other words, was that act of cashing a check, did that become a vehicle for me to come back into the spirit? If it did, then it doesn't matter which one I'm doing. It doesn't matter at all. See, for you it still matters. You're saying, I want to earn my living in a way that doesn't catch my consciousness. And my statement to you is, learn how your consciousness should not be caught by anything. And one of the ways to do it is take any job that comes along and work with it and make it your yoga. Including the fear of being trapped. Including the fear of being trapped. Okay, if service is my yoga, I'll serve. What else have I got to do? Because what happens is when you go and give a lecture, somebody comes up and says, say, I got a great hot tub up in the mountains. Would you come up after the lecture? Well, if you come up, the next day you're wiped out. And the next day you got to do it again. And you got to surrender wanting anything other than to do the service. And you got to surrender what you eat, and you got to surrender what you drink, and you got to surrender who you, you know, all the stuff. And you just got to simplify and just do it and do it and do it. And I was seeing, could I die into it well enough so I could be free in the form? Not free by pushing away the form. Because if you're only free by pushing away the form, you're obviously not free, because you're always afraid of a form. People would say, I can't stand the cities. What they're saying is, I can't stand that the city awakens in me things I want, and that I can't have, and that I feel frustrated and hurt and upset. It's the confusion between external time and external freedom and internal freedom. You keep thinking external freedom is correlated with internal freedom, but it isn't necessarily. And when you're internally free, you can be externally totally bound. Totally bound. You can be in prison, you can be in anything. It doesn't matter that much. It's just too bizarre to hear this, but it doesn't matter that much. Because it's always mattered so much to all of us.
You said a few minutes ago, you don't have to change the form, you have to change your mind. And so why go off to Hawaii for a month surfing? Why don't you just change your mind and stay here and surf some more?
Okay.
I think you're right, but I still think I'm going to Hawaii. I am fully appreciative of exactly what you're saying, and I know I've been watching myself do this with fascination and with that whole idea of the curriculum, of seeing the places. Like, I knew, you can sense where you're not in tune, where you're not into your incarnation properly. I mean, freely. And I could tell when I came to Esalen and got into the hot tub and had the first massage, I was aware of how out of my body I was. I mean, how I had not acknowledged my body in a way so that it was a harmonious temple of part of my being. And one of the things that drew me to Hawaii rather than to a monastery or rather than to another soup kitchen or something was that I can feel the balancing of energy and heart and mind, and I know that this is like an energy-body process that I'm drawn to do that. And I can't tell that kind of doing that isn't the most compassionate act I can do for everybody else, by the way. Not to take me out of the field particularly, but to bring me back with a way that I can really incorporate the joy of Hawaii into it. I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe it'll be something else. I don't know what the teaching will be yet. So at some level, it doesn't matter, and that's what's interesting. Because it doesn't matter, it gets very arbitrary. I mean, that was just a whim. It was one thought that I decided to manifest, and I've got hundreds of others that are on the drawing board that may be manifest and they may not. You know? And you don't really know, and so it just turns out that, okay, do that one. Because I can feel my body isn't being honored properly. And I know that being in the ocean for 4 or 5 hours a day, surfing, body surfing, a lot of kind of things loosen and open. The ocean's a very healing thing for me, to be in it.
An observation that I have is that what has made me loosen up and see the duality of life is, and nothing really matters, is the suicide that we're going through as a planet. And just when I drink LA water from the cabinet, okay, I'm drinking LA water, it's okay, I can just move through it.
Yeah. Exactly. Death, as we're going to talk about it, is one of the greatest vehicles for awakening. And the death of a culture, or the death of a planet, or the death of institutions, or the death of your body, or all of it is the same stuff.
Just live in the present.
Just, yes. It's what Don Juan talks about, living with death on your left shoulder.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a question. Maybe you have a suggestion for how would you suggest handling our relationships with our parents, that when I relate with my parents regarding issues of money, like you were talking a minute ago, how do we come out of those conversations without feeling, how I come out of those conversations feeling like I'm hurting them and I'm frustrated by not being able to do what they would want or approve of, and I'm frustrated that they can't understand that that's not important to me. That pleasing them isn't the most important thing to me, yet how can I let them understand? Or how can I understand?
You can become what it is you are beginning to understand. And then you will be that for them. There's a great story of a kid that I knew, was in New Hampshire, and then he went out to Tassajara in Green Gulch under Suzuki Roshi, and he flipped out from too much purity or something, and he ended up in a mental hospital with his Jewish parents in Cleveland. And he used to call me and swear at me on the phone all the time, and things showing he was psychotic. Then he went home for a weekend, and he called me after it, and I said, well, how did it go? And he said, well, he said, when I tried to talk to my mother about Buddhism, she hated it. But when I was the Buddha, she didn't mind at all. And it's interesting that it's you, the relation we have with parents is so deeply rooted reactive that they know how to say up, and you go up, up, oop, up, oop, up, oop. And they know how to create the guilt in you. They know how to play on the least thing that's left. And that's why it's like your home territory is that the last one where you can stay clear. I used to work on myself and work on myself, and I get so high and so clear, and then I go home and I'd last about 20 minutes. And I thought, that's pretty good, you know? And then I got so that I'd last an hour, and then I'd last 2 hours, and before it would wear down and I'd get caught again. And then after a while, you begin, at first you really want to stay around situations that don't catch you, because you'd rather stay at Esalen or someplace where there's enough consciousness around so you don't have to get caught. But later, when you want to get free, you want to stay right at the edge of that fire. Right at the edge of that fire. And they are the fire. They're, now, if the fire is too hot, the issue is whether the fire burns or the fire purifies. Who you think you are, fire burns. Who you in truth are, it purifies. Okay? But if you